What we're going to do for this session is look at church planting very much with broad brush strokes. This is sort of church planting 101. Some of you will know all of this and more, but it may set the scene for discussions. It may set the scene for what also might be talked about in more detail this afternoon. So that's what we're doing. Apologies if this doesn't quite scratch where you're itching, but never mind. And as it were, I'm going to be running it off the screen, so everything's going to be on there. In 1991, it was Peter Wagner who described church planting as the single most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven. Now, whatever you may think about Peter Wagner and some of the stuff he came out with, it is still worth noting that that is a mighty big statement concerning church planting, the single most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven. So the question is, was he right? And the question also is, why is it big now? Why now is church planting the in thing? Why is it one of those things that when we get together at gatherings like this, it's not so much how big is your church, but maybe how many churches have you planted as the sort of metric for whether you're really cool and hip and doing well as a pastor. Let's just go back to 1975. Let's try and place this all historically. 1975, some of you will remember it. Some of you were ministering. Quite a few of you were born there. But 1975, it was days of pre-Alpha, pre-Christianity Explored. They hadn't come on the scene then. Billy Graham was halfway between his 1966 rallies there at Wembley that, again, had a big impact on the land. My wife was saved at one of those. And the 1984 Mission England meetings in various stadia, which probably represent some of the last large-scale evangelistic missions that were done in our country. I know Louis Palau came and did some later, but really probably 1984 was the end of that sort of work. 1975 was 4 years before New Frontiers begins, just to try and put it in some context as well. 1975, the stress was on personal evangelism. That was the phrase that we loved. That was the phrase that we used. And it was very much building centered events. The church would put on an event, and our task was to bring them in. So, you know, we would get our speakers, our musicians, whatever it was, but it was building-centered, and our primary strategy was attract folks into the church for a special. So, in that year, a Christendom mindset still dominated, although the cracks were beginning to appear then. Postmodernism was beginning to form, particularly that aspect of it which carried with it a greater suspicion of authority. Anyone saying, you know, this is it, this is what we do, this is how it works, this is the meta-narrative that holds everything together. The charismatic movement is emerging during this period. Fountain Trust was formed in 1964. And during the 80s and into the 90s, most UK church planting was related to the intentional spread of charismatic brand labels. I think that's quite an important point to make. There was a lot of church planting that went on then, but it was very much the brand. So, for example, New Frontiers, who were some of the leaders in that church planting, again, Sussex, you know, you guys would know about that particularly. New Frontiers planted New Frontiers churches. And if a town didn't have a New Frontiers church, it was likely that that would be a target of activity. The first question was not, is there gospel witness in the town? The first question was, is there our brand of church in the town? Now, that's not, you know, that is not said with any sense of denigration. It is just recognizing the dynamics that were happening at that time. But now, and by now, really with the surge in church planting, I'm taking that as from the late 90s, church planting is in. It's the in thing to do. And the question is, what's changed? What drives it on now that folks like us, we are talking about church planting? You as a partnership, Gospel Partnership, recognise that you should be church planting. It is almost a given now. Year 2014, this is almost a given. After 20 years, church planting, that's what we should do. I think some of the things that have changed is understanding in a whole number of areas. Number one, evangelism is not so much come and hear as show and tell. The old evangelistic message was come and hear. Our job in terms of personal evangelism was to create enough of a friendship so that we could say to someone, would you come with me to an event? And our hope, our expectation was that person would get saved at that event. It was a come and hear. Whereas now, increasingly, I think what is happening is it is a show and tell. The change in the way that people operate, the first question they're not asking is it true? But the question is, does it work? And therefore, church planting with its opportunities to show gospel community life in action is very attractive. It is very powerful. It is the show and tell model. It is a community shaped around the gospel, shaped around the Lord Jesus Christ, hopefully modelling the truths that are also told. But this is a slightly different approach from what we would have noticed a generation ago. I think what we also see is increasingly the breakdown of the sacred and the secular. Whereas once there was very much that division between religion and secular life, that is breaking down. Now, you may argue with that and say, well, the secular world is growing larger and larger. But I think the Enlightenment, death of the Enlightenment, going into postmodernism means that that old divide is disappearing. And therefore models of church that are acceptable, being looked to, actually can go outside the old clergy-laity divide. I think there is a rediscovery of church as a community, not a building. To me, this is one of the major features. There is, you know, a lot more thinking on ecclesiology and evangelism that means that when we look at the church, you know, we were so building-centred. Now we're saying, well, actually, when you go to the New Testament, it is not the building, it is the people. And hence we use expressions such as mission rather than outreach. I was telling the folks at Haywards Heath last night that when I was approached to take on the role that I do for FIEC, I was asked to be the outreach director. That was the title they gave. And I said, I don't want to be the outreach director. I don't believe in outreach. Because outreach was a term that seemed to carry with it the sense that it is an attractional-based model or a church-based model. You know, you go out from a building and you sort of capture a few folks and you bring them in and you sort of get them bedded in and then you gear yourself up for the next time we're going to go out. That's why, and again, if this is putting hackles up your back, forgive me, but missional, however you understand it, how I am understanding it is every believer acting as salt and light in their communities, communicating Jesus Christ as God sovereignly gives the opportunity. That is now the model that we are increasingly working towards. Number of books, I suppose most notably books like Total Church from Timothy and Chester, were emphasising the community aspect of what it means to be a church. By the way, I will just say in passing, with the crowded house model in Sheffield, it is interesting to see that they also are refining that and they do now meet centrally and make quite a bit of their building. But that's just an aside and I'm saying nothing else on that. I think we're also seeing the death of nominalism. Today church is smaller. Inevitably, some of you come from some of the major denominations. Those denominations, as you will know, have been in virtual meltdown, but the rate of decline has been arrested, and in some areas it stopped because basically it can't go virtually any lower than it can go. You are down to it. So that actually means less inertia, more life. I think when something like that is stripped down, that is probably actually a very good thing. The death of nominalism is a good thing. And therefore there is that more energy to be the people that we're called to be. And it would be impossible for us to overlook the large influx of believers from non-British backgrounds. If I was doing this in London, this would be the obvious thing that we would be saying. London has seen considerable growth in church-going population. I think it's 8%. Some of you maybe could correct me, but that was the figure I think I heard a couple of days ago. But that is all driven by the influx of the African church. So the largest churches in the country are black Nigerian churches. There is a Nigerian church planting network, Redeemer Church of Christ, I think it is. Again, forgive me if I got that. But I was talking to some of these guys. They have over 400 churches within the M25. Okay, they say you shouldn't have a church more than 10 minutes away from you. Now, they will act in and operate in somewhat different ways. They will quickly grow, they may quickly die, but you know, this is what they are going for, and there may be issues over theology, which I think second generation will need to address, and is what we are working through in some areas. But we do need to be aware of the large influx of believers from non-British backgrounds. I don't know how much you see that in the Sussex context, but certainly in the more heavily dense urban contexts, we find that. I, for example, at Kensington, made sure we recruited. I had a Nigerian associate for 4 years because being a poor inner city area, it inevitably meant we were a multicultural congregation, which was lovely. 300-400 people, over 32 different nationalities, a growing African presence, and it was important for us to have a black Nigerian represented on our leadership, and that helped us enormously and helped me trying to understand something of the issues that we were needing to engage in. Let me just take the expression church planting. Strange expression in its own way, but we understand it. Church, what are we planting? Well, it's emphasizing the community nature of God's people. We are community. We are the ecclesia. We are the called out. We are the called together. We are people who live a common life in God's grace. And that means the true gospel is, certainly should be, at the heart of church. It is foundational and forming. It motivates and shapes how believers live. It is the gospel that births churches. It is the gospel that shapes churches. See, I grew up in an age where it was like the gospel got you in, but then it was a sort of quasi-law legalism that sort of kept you going. You know, there was certainly a divide between the Sunday and the Monday. You know, and my dad was a great gospel preacher. My granddad was a great gospel preacher. But then the actual living out of the Christian life, the gospel wasn't as connected. I hope I'm not doing them a disservice. They're both dead. They can tell me later. But I hope I'm not doing them a disservice. Do you understand what I'm saying? I think the issue now is we recognize the gospel is not only the way in, the gospel is the way along, the gospel is the way out. In other words, a life of repentance and faith not only gets you into the kingdom, that's not only what we preach by way of gospel invitation, it is what we preach to our people. Repent and believe. The gospel is the ongoing formative thing. If you look at Titus, and you see Paul unpacks, just he gives some wonderful gospel descriptions, and then he then says to Titus, these are the things you are to stress, and stress to the believers. Stress the gospel. Go on preaching the gospel to the believers, because it is the gospel that forms and shapes. And just as the gospel talks about barriers that break down the division between us and God, the gospel, as Paul's, it's the theme of Ephesians, isn't it? The gospel is what breaks down the barriers that separate us from one another. So I think a recapturing of gospel life in our churches means a recapturing of community life. And the gospel is going on, shaping and motivating how believers live. Whereas it used to be, you know, I will wear my Sunday best. We were maintaining a particular culture. You know, this is what Christians do. We're white, middle class, and this is the culture that we are to maintain because this is our Christian duty. We're past that. Now, I know that's a broad, gross generalisation, but hopefully you understand what I'm getting at. Thus, a church will share gospel essentials with all other true churches, but will look different in different contexts. You know, so the gospel communities will look different. See, what joins you guys together here in the gospel partnership is your standing together on the essentials of the gospel. But probably, if you talk about your churches, they will look very different in the way that it is worked out. Some of you will work in poor areas. Some of you work amongst, you know, very rich and influential people. And your church approaches will be radically different. Your churches will look radically different. That's absolutely cool. That's fine. Because the gospel works its way out different in different contexts. Planting talks about churches. Planting emphasizes the organic, the progressive, the reproducing nature of the work. In that sense, it can be a very helpful metaphor for us. This isn't Lego churches. This is planting. This is life. This can be messy. This can take you by surprise. But there is life and growth, and there should be fruit. Really, I suppose that the metaphor is drawn from 1 Corinthians 3, 6 to 9. Paul, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labour. For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building. So a number of metaphors of the church, and it is that sense of planting which has been adopted by the present movement. Just thinking about the New Testament model, Roland Allen, the great missiologist, said this: Paul did not go out as a missionary preacher merely to convert individuals. He went to establish churches from which the light might radiate throughout the whole country. Just to keep us awake, some references will come up. Could someone just read this out? Could someone read Acts 13, 49, please, for us, for Pisidian Antioch?
The word of the Lord spread through the whole region.
Okay, let's keep putting these together. Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 8. This whole idea of the message going out into regions. Ephesus. Could someone read Acts 19, 9 to 10, please? And then someone follow through with the Colossians references. And one of those who probably was at that lecture hall, the tyrant's lecture hall, Epaphras was the guy who was instrumental in Colossians. If someone could read the Colossians references, please.
I want you to know how much I'm struggling for you and for those at Laodicea and for all who have not met me personally.
Okay, so Paul didn't have direct contact with that. This was a letter that was read more widely than Colossae. 4 verses 13 to 15.
I vouch for him that he is working hard for you and for those at Laodicea and Hierapolis. Our dear friend Luke, the doctor, and Demas send greetings. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea and to Nympha and the church in her house.
Thank you. So we've got Epaphras who planted that church and that church itself, the spread that went on. There. Why do new churches grow fast? Let me give you some reasons why it seems to be effective for church plants. Number one, now fairly obvious to say, but there is the imperative of survival. To survive, you must grow. And you work hard to survive. you will put efforts into it. There are no guarantees with new churches. And so you throw yourself upon the Lord, and you throw yourself into the work, because if you don't, it is going to fail. New churches grow fast because they are more flexible and informal. There are fewer barriers for newcomers. If someone comes into your church, maybe, let's say your church has been going for 50 years or more, that, I don't know how many that would cover in this place, but that already means that in your church there are levels of entry and acceptance. So an outsider arrives and they will feel, I've got to work out how I connect with the people here. And maybe after 5 years, you know, maybe that person might become a deacon if they've been trusted and so on, and another. You know how it goes. I don't want to overmake my point. But new churches have an informality about them, have a flexibility about them, that means newcomers find less barriers, which is one of the points that emerges in point three here. There are less distinction between newcomers and long-term members. It really, in church plants, it doesn't happen. Oh, you came here 6 months ago. You're the old-timer. So there is immediately a greater ownership. I can do something in this church. There is a place for me to serve. There is a role that I have. And if you've been involved in church planting, you will know that everyone, it's hands on board. You know, we've got to get this done. We need you to help with the refreshments, greet folks, put out the chairs, put away the chairs, do, you know how it goes. 1,001 jobs, and people quickly are serving in a church plant setting, and that is great. There is an ownership. They are probably serving in ways that they never were able to in the established church, the sending church, the mother church. I'll maybe say something more about this in the 20 minutes I have in the first session this afternoon. Some of our experiences from Kensington, we planted about 4 churches, and it was just fascinating. We used some different models, and just fascinating to see how that operated and how some people were really blessed and helped and some weren't. And therefore this just underlines the point I'm making. There is greater and faster involvement and ownership. We are part of this. The church that we planted, that I now go to, called Village Church, Emerson's Green, we planted 20 people. It's now up to about 100. It's been going for about 3.5 years. And it's folks, there are folks there who quickly were contacted. They started coming within the first 3 months, and now they're at the right at the heart of things. You know, we're involved in this church. This is essential to us. Greater, faster involvement and ownership than if they were in the traditional, older church, the mother church. And there's a better demographic understanding. If you plant a church somewhere, you've got to work out who you are ministering to. Now, that may sound blindingly obvious, but the point is this. If you are ministering in a long-established church, when was the last time you did a sort of a demographic survey of your community? Because your community is changing all the time. All the time. But you've been there for years. You know how it is, don't you? Well, do you? Whereas you do a church plant. If you're going to do a church plant in a particular area, you do hard work. Some of the most important things you do are is the demographic studies, is the mapping of a particular community. You will get to know that community. You'll know how it operates. You will know the footfall patterns of people. You will know what are the issues that are confronting people. Because could I say this? You present the gospel, which is so big, so fully orbed, you will present the gospel differently to different communities. Now, you may say, oh, that sounds like heresy. No, what I'm trying to say is the gospel remains the same. But there are aspects of it that you may emphasize. So, for example, where I worked, ministered at Kensington in Eastern, really poor area, blah, 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 dangerous road, stuff like that. It was lots of folks, and what was yielding fruit in terms of gospel ministry was where we made sure that, in terms of talking about justice was actually very important to people from that context. People who feel themselves to be victims for whatever reasons. So the one of the areas of gospel that we would emphasize more is the justice of God. Whereas in some other areas, some of the areas that maybe you guys minister in Sussex, it is not justice that you maybe are really talking about. It is idolatry. It is the sufficiency of self. It is the fact that people are say, I don't need Jesus. I'm fine as I am. You see, where you worship in a, where you live in a really poor community, people know they have needs. That's why it's easy to work in poor inner city. I think it is really tough working in affluent suburbia. You know, God in his goodness kept me from affluent suburbia because I'm not sure I'd be good enough for that, have the strength for that. Some of you guys do just that, and I just honour you because that can be so hard. Working in a community which is absolutely feeling sufficient about itself. But you see what I mean? Good demographics mean it's going to shape everything. How do I present this? And when you do a church plant, you actually think about these things. When you're in, you've been in pastorate for the last 10, 20 years in the same place, you don't necessarily have the same awareness of the community that you're ministering to. Now, that's a broad generalisation, and there are some of you here who are just really so aware of your community, and you're active in the community, and you're on the street. Do you hear what I'm saying? I apologise, I'm not meaning to demean you. I am saying, I'm giving you generalisations, and I hope you take them in that particular way. Ott and Wilson, in their book on church planting, said this pragmatically: new churches grow faster and reach more. Our experience has been, as I said, you know, fast growth of the church plant that we did into Emerson's Green, fast growth at the same time we did another church plant into the city centre, because there was no gospel witness in the centre of Bristol, city centre of Bristol. And that has also grown fast. We've seen people being, it's not transfer growth, it's been conversion growth. And you get people saved and they are just so excited about the message of Jesus, and, you know, they're the best evangelists going. New churches mobilise more workers. You've got to do the work. People in larger churches can hide. You see, at Kensington, our policy was when the church got up to 400, we needed to get rid of people and plant a new church. But we had a, therefore, there are times where you just have people who are sitting, thinking, this is nice, I can just come along on a Sunday and just sort of be entertained by all this Christian stuff. You don't do that in a church plant. You've got to work. It mobilises more workers. New churches effect greater social change. They're new kids on the block. They're going to actually get involved in community projects. And so therefore they will have an impact upon the social fabric of the areas in which they find themselves. New churches better reach untouched people groups. Because maybe an established church, if I could say, draws its circle quite widely. At Kensington, that's what we found that we did. We had a wide circle that drew in the people, but there were groups that we weren't just connecting with. And it was only through church plants that they would be able to connect with groups that we couldn't connect with. I hope you see the point I'm making there. New churches promote greater service and discipleship. I think we've touched those points. And new churches stimulate existing churches. They are not to be considered a threat. Just having a conversation that I do believe that new churches should be planted where there is no gospel witness. And FIC-wise, we are concerned. The research we do, the mapping we do, the identification of unreached areas we do, we are looking at gospel witness of whatever shape or form. We are not looking to plant FIC churches. We rejoice where there is a gospel church, and where there is a gospel church, we won't think about planting another gospel church. We will go to the many areas where there is no gospel witness. The Blackburns, the Burnleys, the Telfords, the Wolverhamptons. And by the way, saying that, you'll say, but I know of a gospel church in Wolverhampton or whatever. We are saying relative to the size of population. There are many areas. And that's, we want to go where the gospel is not heard. And that should be shaping us. And for the churches that do it, it wonderfully stimulates to new life. One of the reasons that happens, we found in one of the first church plants we did, we revitalised the church to the south of the city. It was called Crossways Tabernacle. And it was down to lovely big church, great plant, strategic area, but it was down to a dozen members, the youngest of whom was 75. And I'd been in touch with them and I was saying, guys, you know, what's going to happen? And I said, we will help you, but we will help you on the following understanding. We're not just here to put bums on seats. We're here to, we will take over. And they accepted that. And we put in 40 adults, 10 children, into that church, along with a church planter and a pastor alongside him. And it was great, but for us as a sending church, it was also, you know, I remember the first Sunday where they weren't there. Because they were gone. It was sort of an old-fashioned type church plant where we just parachuted them in. There was a sense of loss. You should have seen my elders and deacons. All these spaces we've got to fill. Because I said to the church planter, or at least the church planter who was going to do the plant, came to me and said, Andy, will you allow me to invite whoever I want? I went, oh, let's think about this. And you know there really can only be one answer. And so I said, yeah, okay. And he chose our best people. And I thought, he gave me a list of 75 of our best people. And I gulped. And I thought to myself, no, he can do that. He can invite them because probably only about 20 of them would want to go anyway. And it was over double that number who then left us. But what that did to Kensington was suddenly there were jobs that needed to be done. We were having to move people from the periphery of church life into the centre of church life. And though there was a real sense of loss and of anguish, and the church, how, you know, what can we do? What can we do to cover all the children's work and all the other activities that we need to do? Do you know, strangely, within 6 months, I just suddenly thought, all the empty seats have gone. Within 6 months, we'd added 50 people to Mother Church, and I don't know why. But I think part of it was we'd drawn more into the core, there was more life, and people who then came to Kensington saw there was opportunities to serve, and they wouldn't just be there as, if I said pew fodder, you know what I mean. So could I just say, if you're here and you pastor a larger church, don't please feel threatened by church plants. You will actually discover that church planting, having a church planting mentality within your church, will actually be to the blessing of your church. I feel maybe for some of you, you need convincing on that issue. Losing people can be very hard. But I think these are areas where we have to trust the Lord. Okay, three main areas of church planting. One is churches planting new churches, new congregations in their area. So, for example, one area is, let's say, Linfield. I took a funeral of my stepmother-in-law in this church, and I took a funeral of my father-in-law at All Saints in the last sort of 12 years. So I have a little knowledge of Linfield, but not that much, so I'm not saying anything. You know, so the question I would be saying is, are there areas here that we could effectively reach with the gospel? Are there areas, communities that are not being touched by the gospel? Now, it may well be that there aren't. But equally, it may well be that there are some. That with thoughtful prayer, we think, no. And could I just say, I think rural churches are a real issue. We've got to be creative about how we can maybe plant into rural communities, how we can strengthen rural communities. Do we need a two-service model on a Sunday? Could we even do a church on a midweek where folks are committed from our mother church, the hub church, the strong church, where activities and relationships, particularly for kids, can be maintained, but we say we're going to put some effort into somewhere else on another time? Do you hear what I'm saying? That's churches planting in areas near them, thinking about their own communities. The second area is where you revitalise dying or struggling causes. That was the first church plant, well, it was actually the second church plant that we did, where we went into this existing church. We realised it was strategic. We realised it was going to close down, but we didn't want the gospel light to go out, so we stepped in. And again, I just say that is what some churches do. It may be what is required for you. Maybe there are dying chapels and causes around you. Some of them should die. Can I say that? We probably got too many churches, and it may be appropriate that some churches should die. Sell up the resources, use them for gospel purposes. I don't think that's in any way being disrespectful. Praise God for the way he's used them at their time, but for some folks, their time is up. But there are some areas where you say, this is a strategic location, let's do something about this. And you may think about, maybe we could put people into this. And I would suggest you do it in taking over. You know, if you're just saying, would you go and support them? That's all they want, people, because then someone will take their funeral. The issue here is, you go in and you say, we could do something, let's plant a church into this existing cause. Or thirdly, pioneer planting, where you go where no gospel churches exist. That's the other way to do it. Areas of the country which are not reached. And it may be, let me give you a challenge as a gospel partnership, it may be that not only should you be looking at Sussex, but could I say, how about you, as a group of churches, saying we're going to recruit, we're going to pay for a church planter who's going to work in Burnley? Because Burnley's not going to be reached unless some folks like you do that. I'm sorry, that's just how it is. So you have I think you have a responsibility not only to your county, but you have a responsibility to your country. And again, there may be, represented here in this grouping, particular contacts and particular burdens and particular individuals who you say, that person would make a great church planter and they have a real aptitude for this particular area. And you might want to say, let's support a work that is outside our boundaries. And I'd love every gospel partnership to think about that. So pioneer planting, going where no gospel churches exist. One and two certainly are the responsibilities of the local church. And three, as I'm suggesting, maybe that is a case of local churches working together to plant in pioneer situations where no gospel churches exist. Just forms of church plants, talking about different models of church planting that you can have. My favoured model, and I'm going to be honest with you straight up, is known as the satellite model. The last two church plants we did at Kensington, the Village Church in Emerson's Green and BC3, Bristol City Centre Church, was the satellite model. What I mean by that is we took 20 people and we put them into each location, and on a Sunday morning they would meet together, but then on a Sunday evening they would come back to Mother Church. We had to get rid of some people because the Sunday morning main service was full. So you've got to get rid of people if you want the church to grow. But then we say, come back in the evening. Now, one of the reasons for that is, for example, children's activities. Children need children. Youth need youth. So you actually look for a way that you could say to a young couple, would you go with your family to this location? Could you plant a church there? But look, for your kids, come back in the evening. We'll put on children's activities. Their friendships will remain. Your contacts will remain. You will be under the authority of the sending church. In due time, as God prospers, maybe that new church will go independent and you can make decisions about whether you go to a one or two service model and what those relationships look like. But let's plant satellite churches. Satellite churches are one of the great ways that some of you guys could move forward. You may have very full main services. Normally that's morning services. Could you get rid of some folks and say, why don't you go and do something here, but come back and join us again for the evening service or whatever is your model. So satellite churches are organically related to the mother church. They are not as costly. It's not as if you say to them, bye-bye, never see you again. But rather, we're going to go on praying for you, we'll be supporting you financially, we'll be giving you oversight, we'll be talking to you, we'll be helping supply preachers and the like. For example, Village Church, when we started it, they didn't have a preacher as one of their leaders, so I would preach for a month, and one of my other staff members, Steve Wilmshurst, would preach for the next month and so on, and we would supply the preaching, and that church has now raised up its own preachers. So there's the satellite model. There's the parachute model. The parachute model is where you get a bunch of people and you drop them in. And that's it. That was the second church plant we did into this area in South Bristol, Headley Park Community, Headley Park Church, as it now is. 40 adults, 10 kids, and we dropped them in. And I, you know, tried to prepare the leaders, and I kept links with them. But by and large, it was goodbye and God bless. And that is a feasible model. But I don't think it's as effective as a satellite model. The danger is that that parachuted in church then becomes isolated, and often it needs help and support, and you need to build networks of friendship between the churches. There's the cell or the community model, whereas that's more the you say to someone, you live in a village. Would you start something there? Would you have a time? It's sort of like a more formal home group. Would you just have a meal, share together with some believers, and open the word and teach the word, and let's see what God will do. See if that'll grow and start operating as that gospel community together, and let's see how that operates. Whether the cell, whether the community will grow. There's the multiple same site model, where you can actually plant churches into existing churches. Could I just say, personal observation, this is just purely my personal observation, I'm wrong about so many things, you wouldn't believe it, well maybe you would, but some churches, when they're getting big, say we're going to go to a two service model, it's the best way. To me, two service models don't work. If you're big enough to go to a two service model, plant a church. Because two service models, you have two churches in the same place. Multiple same site model might be, there may be a congregation that meets, and maybe for some of you from the Anglican Communion, this is closer to some of the issues that you are facing, where you could actually go and strengthen a particular church, and you wouldn't be completely happy for some of your people to completely throw their lot in, but it might be possible to put a community into a church for a 4:30 service or something like that. So you're using existing plant and existing reputation to build a gospel work. Do you see what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to get at? It needs imagination. Now, I'm trying to... When should I be shutting up? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? 5 minutes? Okay. Think about that, and maybe this afternoon we can talk about strengths and weaknesses of each of those models. But basically, guys, I'm trying to encourage you to think creatively about, is it going to be right and helpful for you to create a model? How can you help? Some of you pastors of smaller churches, should you be entering into relationships with larger churches? Maybe some people drive past your church to go to a bigger church. What could be done there? When to plant a church? The received wisdom is you plant when the size of the gathering or congregation occupies about 75% of accommodation. So if in your building you've reached that level, you should be planting a church, basically. So you don't say, oh look, my church is full. A full church is not a sign of honour for you. A full church is a sign that you failed because you should have planted. If you want people to grow and stay in your churches, they've got to see empty seats. Do you get that? There is a sense in which a crowd draws a crowd, but there is a limit to that. Young couples and so on who are looking for a church, if they come into a church which is absolutely packed to the rafters, will not stay in that church if they want to be used. So plant a church if you're that size. Plant a church when the need or the opportunity occurs and must be taken. Sometimes in the providence of God, there is a situation that occurs. It's like, I've got to take this opportunity. God is in this. It's a once in a lifetime. Don't want to miss this opportunity. Maybe a building becomes available that you know you could use as a hub for community gospel life. So you want to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit. It may be that God provides you with someone in your church community who is so gifted as a church planter. And the way you're going to develop them is to get them to plant a church. Otherwise they're going to shrivel in your church community. Again, I hope you see what I'm trying to say. Which is really, I suppose, my third point. I jumped ahead. When God provides gifted leaders who are keen to rise to the challenge, use them. Where you've got someone who's a church planter. Church planters are not pastors. There's a difference. I think church planters are not as nice. As pastors, we have to be... We take into consideration the whole body, the flock that we've got. Could I just say, I think church planters need to be really focused. What are we about? Why are we doing it? We're going to go for this. You may have those sort of people in your congregation, so you should be thinking about using them. Key areas for church planters, you need to research the area and community. If you want to think more about that, maybe talk to me. I've got some ideas on mapping that I think could be helpful, but we don't have time to go into. Develop networks of support. Church planting should never be done in isolation from others. We need the support of one another. Thirdly, establish a leadership team. If you're thinking we need to put a plant in, you need a leadership team. Not just a planter, but a leadership team to go in with him. Fourthly, you need to envision the core team. Say, this is what we're about. The vision is what's going to carry them through. When everything is tough and difficult, it is the vision that you give them. Fifthly, set the culture. Actually, as leaders, that's the most important thing we do. We set the culture for church life. And you've got to set the culture for church planting life. When Neil Todman did the church plant for us in Headley Park, part of the culture, one of the requirements for the 40 adults was each had to commit themselves to getting involved in one community activity a week. Because that was part of the culture. We're involved in this community. We're not just people who have pity on these poor people. And so we're just going to come in on a Sunday and we're going to have a service and then our consciences will feel better and we'll go back to our nice houses. No, you're actually going to get involved in the community. That's the culture of what we're about. Do you see what I mean? So you've got to set the culture for the church. I'm just going to flag up some questions. At this moment in time, I'm not going to give answers. You may want to just think about some of this stuff and I'll leave it to Phil and others whether it's developed. What would be some of the differences between urban and rural church plants? That's going to affect some of you here. So there are urban situations you should be planting into. There are maybe rural situations you should be planting into and they will be different. How should gospel churches relate? What I mean by that is, if a church gets planted, how is that going to relate to other gospel churches? And I think you're working on this as well with what you've done here in Haywards Heath. That must be kept to the forefront. When does a church plant stop being a church plant? That actually sounds a simple question, but to me that is the $64,000 question. Could I just say your ecclesiology here is vital? I'll leave that till one of my later questions, which may prompt that. But, you know, when does the church say we're a church? Maybe it's when it actually plants another church. I don't know. There you go. What are the essential characteristics of a newly planted church? What's going to be in place? What are the key issues? How should a church go about putting a core team together to plant a new work? Do you ask for volunteers? Do you go by the geography? We're going to plant in that particular area, so we're going to choose the 20 people who live in that particular area. Or do you look, for example, at gifting? Do you say, we're going to need a musician, we're going to need a this, we're going to need a that, we're going to need a the other, and you choose according to gifting? These are vital questions. I'm not going to give answers. What gifting would you look for in a lead church planter? Again, maybe I've hinted at some of that already. How does this affect the Anglican Catholic parish system and bishops' oversight? This again is one of the big questions in gospel partnerships. In Bristol, Mike Kane would know some of you would know Mike Kane. He was curate associate vicar at Christchurch Clifton. Went to plant Emmanuel Church and he's superb. Mike is an incredible guy. I just love him to bits. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gospel guy. And their work is growing phenomenally fast. But they got the Willy Wonka golden ticket. They got the bishop's permission so that they can plant out. So they are planting out and they're doing it with the bishop's permission. But I get the feeling that in this particular diocese that isn't going to be as forthcoming. And therefore other thoughts have to be considered. Some of you will be aware of Richard Cokin. Richard Cokin has fairly strong views about this and the co-mission way of doing things. We've actually, FIAC, we have a number of co-mission churches that have come into fellowship with the FIAC, basically because for him the most important thing is planting a gospel community, and if that means he has to step outside sort of Anglican orders and parish boundaries and the like, he will do that, but he will do that with an ecclesiology which is independent. Could I just say, ecclesiology is vital, we have to think it through, but neither ecclesiology is secondary. Think about ecclesiology, we've got to think about ecclesiology. I actually think it's quite key for church planting, actually. But it is a secondary issue as well. And that's why I love gospel partnerships. And what activities would you look to start in a new church plant? I'm going to shut up, I think. My time is done. I'll hand over to Phil to see however he wants to take this.
Don't sit down.
Thank you very much.
Time for a couple of questions, maybe?
Maybe three, if you're quick.
Right. I'm here, yes.
Can you just shout so we can get what you want?
Okay, so I'm with a church in central Brighton, so it's a bit in the city. Quite a few times you mentioned your community, and then sometimes you said your area. And I'd like to try and tease that out a bit, because I think one of the things we find in central Brighton is there isn't a community. There's lots of people who have to live there, but don't feel to a particular affinity to that area. And we've got ex-students and where we are based, it's that sort of thing. So could you tease out a little bit
okay. What
do you mean by community
and relate to the area? Okay, I'll say two things. One is, I did try to recognise that a church, you know, what we did was broad, you try and embrace, but there are areas of the community that you will never get. You know, there are groups that lie outside it. If I was to do some sort of Venn diagram, you know, you'd have a big circle, but you've got lots of circles outside. So we concentrate on the majority and try and embrace many of the circles as we can. But equally for the community of Eastern, maybe like the community of Central Brighton, in as much as there is a bohemian aspect, it's very eclectic nature is its community. So people come to Easton for a number of reasons. We get lots of refugees. We do a lot of work with refugees. We have a very, very fast-growing Somali population. We've had a very fast-growing Roma population. But you also have some working, some real high-end professionals who just love living in that multicultural area, as we do, with all that that means, the smells, the foods, the engagement that goes on. Crime may be high, because that happens, but it is a particular community that loves community. So when I say our community, that is a broad representation of it. And we will work with Somalis, and we do. We've had some of the largest Somali gatherings in Europe in our church building. They wouldn't know it was the church building, that's another question. And different groups that we try to engage with. So it won't, in the 12 years we've been deliberately trying to work with Somalis. We've started charity and we have face-to-face contact with loads of them. We haven't seen a single Somali saved. But that doesn't stop us going for that, because they're part of our community. But equally, we have a large community also, which, for example, we have sex workers. So there is a group that we work with, 125 Project, with sex workers. There's homeless and drug addicts. We work with them through a thing called Wild Goose Cafe and Crisis Centre Ministries. So we try to embrace as much. And how we are then known in the community is we are known as people who care for all sorts, because that is the longing of our area, of our community. And I reckon probably, to some degree, something would be similar for yourselves, that there is a very broad community. You know, Brighton, also gay issues, I imagine, would be very high on the agenda, and how churches reach out and show love and mercy to gay folks. Those, I think, are all challenges. I don't. You'd know far better. Sorry, I'm rambling.
Thank you very much. We've got time for one question which has a quick answer. You want to say?
Yeah, one of those.
You have to shout.
Could you just kindly say a word about accountability of the plant?
Thank you. A lot of that will be down to the model of church planting that you do. So that's far easier where there is satellite planting. So the leaders of the satellite churches that we did, they come back and we met centrally and had oversight for them. So there was accountability in that area. Then you may get the planted churches or the parachuted churches. And I suppose you would want to put in place church planters who are passionate also about partnership. That, I think, would be one of their qualifying characteristics. Otherwise, what you get is a bunch of mavericks who will do their own stuff, no accountability to anyone, and they can do a lot more damage and harm. So thank you for the question, because maybe it prompts something that I didn't say.
Would you also recommend a board of trustees, perhaps?
Can be. I'm, for example, we talked about Emmanuel, where Mike Kane is. I'm one of the trustees for that particular plant, and I ask hard questions of it. So it can be useful, but I would say it also then comes down to your ecclesiology. Ultimately, you want to see that replaced. I would want to see that replaced. Maybe I should put by a body of elders who would take that responsibility upon themselves and not outside individuals. I would want to see self-governing, autonomous churches.